meal at 6. We still have some brunch for you're driving and you say you're doing this military training on a morning.
Mm-hmm.
What time did the day start?
Rivale, 6 o'clock. And what happened then, you were out most mornings by 6:30. And you did a road walk, you were in your PT gear, and you did a road walk, run type of thing, or something like 5 miles every morning. That was before breakfast. And back to the camp and quickly changed into whatever breakfast time, etc. I don't remember, breakfast was maybe 8 o'clock, something like that. And then went on to whatever training, while you were going on military training or driving, you know. Sometimes you went out in the morning, you were out all day. Another time you went out and you were out training the sergeant and corporal and all that sort of thing. Getting them as far as spending over an hour, take you out in trucks and dump you. You had to make your own way back, fighting as you came back and this sort of thing. It was a very intensive training there, isn't it?
Practical.
Warfare, yes. All that was no messing about. It was all proper warning, war training, you know. From experience, I've been brought up, I think they were at that stage training everyone up, up and down the country as if that's read yourself. We were learning how to fight during the night. Some nights we were out all night and we were out to stop in bed until lunchtime and then we were out again in the afternoon, this sort of thing. All different sort of training to get used to being out at night and trade craft at night, etc. We spent quite a bit of time in the gym as well, you know, the PT instructor there, and they had a hold of you for about an hour, two or three times a week. Real physical jerks and so on. Slightly, not an awful lot at that stage, except in the gym, you know, they showed you a few things there, but not an awful lot. More geared up towards light infantry training, you know.
And this basically your early morning drill training, so you be
getting us fit. Marching drill regularly. We did that about 3 or 4 times a week, marching up and down on the parade ground and marches as far as Coop, going through there and out of Coop. The route marches, this sort of thing. Mainly to get you fit, I think, you know, that's what it was, you know. It is a lot at the end of it all, you know.
And in your weapons,
we
ran
into we saw the. We did a lot of training there at Bransworth with the LMG, which, I mean, each platoon had three as well when we went back to battalions, but the three Brens, one in each section. The Piat mortar, we were introduced there to that, you know, and I think we all fired it there. They had a training ground down at the bottom of the camp for that sort of thing, and grenade throwing, we all threw a grenade.
Is a
Piat
easy to fire?
Is
a weapon?
It was easy, but it had a terrific kick on your shoulder if you didn't hold it. Nearly put your shoulder out, and it was heavy to carry, very heavy to carry. But I fired one in Italy, you know, later on. But I think it was a case of carrying it about most of the time. And then we were introduced to the Sten gun, you know.
didn't like it actually. I mentioned it a bit later in the war, but I never had. Well, I never comfortable with it, you know. It was after Jan. That was a trouble. At Jan, the short colleague actually killed through it. Definitely. Yes, yeah, there wasn't much. Oh, yes, I'm forgetting about the mortar, the 2-inch and the 3-inch mortar. We did quite a bit with that. But as I say, down at the training field, everyone got a shot at firing that, you know, which come in handy later in life.
When was the 2-inch mortar used? Was it a platoon weapon?
Platoon weapon, mainly, yes. And the HQ had the 3-inch mortar, you know. Later on, if it was needed, they would call it. But the platoon used the 2-inch mortar, yes. Again, quite heavy to think about, isn't it? You learned how to, as a platoon, pass it on to someone else to carry, so the same boat wasn't carrying it all the time. But that was the good part about it. But, of course, in action, you couldn't do that. But you weren't marching about with it so much as you were. Occasionally, we carried all the weapons, you know, full working gear, and let you see what it was like hunting everything, with all the full packs and everything on, you know.
Any other weapons that
No, I don't think I have anything else.
You didn't teach the use of the revolver?
No, I never got a hold of it. I'm just thinking, no, I don't think there's any other one of that. I did a lot of, again, field craft, aircraft recognition, you know, and this sort of thing, which I used to think was a waste of time because, you know, an aeroplane's an aeroplane. End of story, not interested whether it's a Messerschmitt or a Stuka or whatever. But this sort of thing, a lot of that. Some of them went into it with zeal and zest, I suppose, but it was never my forte to learn all these things. I don't think you'd bring them in to cope with.
The history of the regiment, did you get any thoughts on that? Most of your pride had in it?
No, most of it was passed on from these old corporals and whatnot. You know, as I say, the weather was a bit adverse and then we got you in the hut and we talked about it. It was more when we got the 13th Battalion that we learned about it. I think we're too busy to be bothering mainly with that. A little bit of idea when the regiment was formed and all this sort of thing. I think a lot of it just went over the top of your head, unless you were really interested, you know, which I wasn't at that time. I'm not happy with being in any case.
This would be the winter period.
It was. it was quite. A bit of snow, I remember, being the January, I think it was early January. By and large, I think we were warmer because we had stacks of fuel. And we sat, you know, we allowed a book of the day or something, or a book of the day for the doings, and we used to scrounge timber when we were out with get hold of bits of wood and whatnot, and that was keep the fire going at night because we couldn't put any more coal on after about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. The fire had to die down, you know. Again, so that it was ready to black lead on the next morning, sort of. But we were, you know, we'd been along back with us, and some of them were good scroungers that went out down to the wood and brought a couple of batches back in, sort of thing. But no, we were back nice and warm, I think. Not to, I'm trying to think what. No,
It's about 8 weeks.
January,
yes. Yes. Took us about the last prayer.
Did you feel that thinking back over the time, did you feel that the thing we were getting really prepared for action?
I think so, yes. As I say, we all knew we'd never had anything like that before, but was there till the 16th of January
1943.
Had you qualified as a driver by then? Oh, yes, we'd all been out and passed a very stringent test as well, you know. Not just learning how to drive, all the different things that you've been taught, what to do, how to get out of difficulties. Pulling trucks back up out of ravines and whatnot with another truck, you know, and all this sort of thing. So all very good training, which came in later on, actually, you know. And of course, the vehicles had to be spotless when you got back. They had to be as clean as you were, as it were, you know. Cleaning down and
and was it your responsibility as a driver to see that there was petrol all in
the vehicle? Oh, you were taught all that, you know, as you, yes, before you put the vehicle away, it had to be stocked up with fuel and that first thing in the morning, it was part of your tasks. It was a 14-day task system. I don't know if you know about that. The things you did every day, it was like a circle divided up like a cake, and certain things you did every day, and certain things you did every third day, fourth day, etc. So over the 14 days, you'd done over every nut and bolt on the vehicle. It was a very good system, absolutely, I think, spot on. Kept the vehicles in tip-top order. And you had to be able to say on day 7 what your task was. They were called tasks. That was all part of the training as well. What was your task for day 8 and this sort of thing.
And you trained to be the battalion motor transport?
We were taught for that, yes. Taught how to be in convoys and all this sort of thing.
Was there a laid down distance that you had to drive between the
convoys
and the next?
Yes, that's right, yeah, there was. Can't remember what they were now, but they were spaced out and you weren't allowed to encroach on the other one and get behind, sort of thing. Very clever.
Does that mean that the convoy can move at the same speed?
Roughly the same, yes. There wasn't as many vehicles on the road then as there are now, so it was more, and people kept out of the way when an army convoy came. There's a pull-in now for ambulances and fire engines. A lot of people, there's some people, but most people got out of your way. And they managed 10 vehicles, you know, going around.
Did you drive as a convoy as part of the training?
Oh, yes, I will do that. Yes, we went off on convoy training and night convoy training. All I had was, and they didn't have them on all the time, was a little slit in the headlight, you know, about half an inch by 2 inches or something. You got used to it.
Yeah.
Actually, what they did have was the differential was painted white, and there was a system of low light with more or less shining on it, you know. Entirely focused on that.
And if you got
too far back, when you got out of reach, sort of thing, you had to catch up. But you got skilled at it, you know. Yeah.
What's the speed in the normal driving situation?
Oh, we could take 50 50-odd, 50-55 now, I think, you know. We used to drive down to 30, of course, you know, conserving fuel and so on. I can't ever remember going faster than that, you know. Conserving fuel, that sort of stuff.
Did the teacher what kind of task you may be given to drive what do you tell them?
They were taught what a company would carry, like the company records and the company office, one of the trucks of the company office, and other, you know, so that in a situation when you were in a live situation, the vehicle would be pulled off the road and with trees and whatnot, you could set a company office up in no time at all. The telephone would be in and the radio and all that sort of thing. That was one vehicle. Another one would be having all the ammunition on and so on. So that you weren't looking about, you know, have you got a box of ammunition, you know, blah, blah. Everything that was in its place. And you were taught all that, you know. What happened if one of them got blown up? Well, it was a funny tale. Then we'd have to find out some, you know, from another company likely to get off from headquarters. I don't know if they had spare ones actually, as far as that went.
Did they teach you the difference between BS1 and ASL?
Later on, much later on, we didn't learn a lot about that at the time. Not until we got nearer going abroad, you know. All basic training. Some of it was called commando training. I don't know why. I suppose it was because we were galloping about fields and up woods and crossing rivers. We crossed the river Weir a few times and had a few soakings, you know. And we learned how to go across the river in a boat. And, I think we've only got those boats and those legs, those collapsible ones, you know, wooden bottoms and canvas size. Which we used much later on, but anyway, we were taught how to use those and learn how to cross rivers and streams and all this sort of thing. All part and parcel of light infantry training.
Were there any accidents that you recall?
Just minor ones where blokes sprained a wrist or, you know, fell down hurt. I think one chap broke her arm one time, but I don't think there's a lot of accidents, no, I don't have a recall of. No major ones anyway, nobody got shot or anything like that. And we went and fired the full course there, you know, with a rifle and a machine gun.
The
Ven gun, I'd say the machine gun, the Ven gun. That was advanced, but we did that. We fired the course, and I think we got 6 months a day extra after you passed that, which was very, very quickly after we got there, yes. The 6 months a day, yes. Third of the 10th, 42, made up the class 2. And the 30th of the 1st, 43 shillings a day. Big pay.
Did you get any extra for qualifying as a driver?
No, you got nothing extra for being a driver. It was just for your weaponry. You could fire the weapons and you got 6 months a day for each of those. So the thing was to get trained on for that. But driving, no. I think it was classed as a perk to be able to be a driver instead of walking. I remember we got into trouble there, it was still me and another chap, on one of these early morning runs, and we went out left out of the camp, went towards Crook, and we must have been feeling a bit sick, and we weren't doing it properly.
about turned us and brought us back, and we thought we're coming in the camp. We marched and we were doubling past the camp, and we went towards Bransforth, which is a way down the road actually. And we were fed up with us, we'd had enough, you know, on this court, but we didn't think much of them, I remember again. And we shouted about turning. We about turned. Ran back to the camp, of course, and the rules of the kitchen that night from the captain.
Was it a bad fatigue?
Wasn't. I tell you the fatigue I got there. The fatigue I got for not being back in on the Sunday, you know, I told you that. I had to go down to the hospital, you know, we had a small hospital there. And I was on my knees all night polishing the floor along the corridor, you know. I did get a few cups of coffee, like, from the nurses, but it was just somebody to polish the hospital floors, that's all it was. It wasn't really hard for kids, you know.
Well,
that was a good place. You got an extra guard for tea or something like that, you know, so you were on the gate.
Now, have you talked to him about the tea with this guy?
No, we taught how to be on guard. I mean, there wasn't an awful lot to that. You were on the picket duty, marching around the camp. You did that automatically. I think we did it twice once. Price over there on picket duty, I remember another couple of times on guard on the gate, you know.
How did they mount the guard?
They did a proper mounting of the guard, the proper guard, you know, on the parade ground and change, you know, march.
How many
past each other? I think there's about 12, if I remember, something like 10 or 12 maybe. They had permanent MPs there, you know. Regimental police, not military police, regimental police. But they used to mount the guard at night, you know, on the night duty. It was all by way of training, I think, really.
And presumably the standard of turnout would have to be.
Oh, smoking. Very demanding, and one was always picked out as a stick man, and he was just dismissed. He could go back to the barracks. He had the night off, you know, and the rest had to go on guard duty.
And he was chosen because he was
considered the smartest. And he used to get down to the grave, taking his shoes off to see if his toenails had been cut. And that was sometimes the deciding factor, because he couldn't decide between who. And it was a big game or something like, you know, but
the weapons, neck and neck, they had to take
that's just end up doing that, and maybe you had a hole in your sock or wasn't properly down, but yours was down better than his, so you got the stick, you were a stick guard, it was called.
It was just a night guard, it wasn't going to go all guard?
No, because we were doing training, you got this. You were on guard duty, you know, and it didn't happen a lot. It couldn't really. As I say, they had the RMPs there, and they were the proper ones. That was their job. I don't know if they were like in the work bed, you know, medical wise or not. I never found out, but they were there all the time, the regulars. But the mirror there to look at us before you went out and see if you were spotlessly smart, and they checked you. They had the responsibility of seeing that you were properly dressed when you went out, or sent you back.
Were they liked, the regimental police? Were they well liked by the
regiment? Not really, no. I think they were very strict, so they weren't really liked, you know. They didn't have a lot to do with them, but I don't think anybody had any love for them, sort of thing, because one or two of them had been turned back. I never was turned back. Some of them had been turned back because they weren't smart, or, you know, the boots weren't the right brightness, etc. The gaiters weren't properly blank or
any excuse.
So you essentially change guards on the parade ground, which is real.
And then march down to the guardhouse and change them there, you know. You formed up on the square in the first place. You did a bit of arms drill and, you know, stand to attention and all this sort of thing. And then the officer of the day, you know, he was inspecting, make sure that everybody was spotless and the rifles were spotlessly clean and sound and everything. And then they marched down to the guardhouse and they called out the guard and they changed guard a proper way, like they do in Buckingham Palace, same thing. Knocks on each other and one guard takes over and the other one is dismissed. There was a man stood there, and I think we were on 2 hours and 4 hours off, if I remember right, during the night. So you did two stands of 2 hours, you know. I can't remember which was the best one, whether you went on 8 to 10 or, you know, came on at 12 to 2 or something. That sort of thing. But I know you did two stints of 2 hours.
And the rest of them stayed in the
barrack. Sleeping off or just sitting playing cards or whatever. That was brought down again. That would be somebody that was on fatigue would be bringing a big Dixie can down of tea. It was always plenty of tea or coffee, cocoa in the army. Oh yes. Challenge and how did it go then? Hogfield goes there, that was it. Advanced to be recognised and smiling because I remember an incident away in North Africa where a dog said that Hogfield goes bang over there. Oh yeah, funny thing to keep your mind. You was happy with the officer. He wasn't very happy.
Anytime
they come and make sure you're on your toes, you know.
No announcement.
No announcement, just turn up, you know, come about the bushes sort of creep up on you.
And who commanded the guard?
Did you call it or something? Corporal, commander. Yes, guard commander. Of course, they were one